This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
I like the program beats. Diamond D is out. I want to say pay. Show biz, there's deals to make. So let's get busy and dig in the crates.
Oh, don't stop. You keep on digging in the crates.
Let's get busy.
Keep on
digging in the crates.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to episode 2 of Digging in the Crates podcast. I'm your host, Phil Schneider. With me, Chris Zellner, the great Chris Zellner, this is probably the 6th of the 17 podcasts he's doing this week. So I appreciate that he's coming along, joining me to watch some pretty good wrestling matches, talk about them. Theme song, which I didn't talk about on the last show because I hadn't found a theme song yet, is Digging in the Crates by Showbiz and AG, produced by DJ Premier. I know Chris is more of a Southern rap fan.
You can't go wrong with Primo.
I had to go New York for this, although I really should find something from the Bay, which is where I...
Well, Ludacris did an album with Primo.
Did he?
Yeah.
Good?
It's underrated, yeah. It didn't get a lot of like radio play, but it was really good.
All right. Well, there you go. Chris is... We're going to do a new thing at the end of this episode where we're going to dig in the crates for something that is not wrestling. So maybe there'll be a bonus one, which is your Ludacris DJ premiere album. But think of the other one. But we got four matches as usual this week. Which one do you want to start talking about, Chris?
Let's just go in order of what you sent me.
Okay. So that'll work. So first is Cactus Jack versus Tarzan Goto. And what is the date on that? I can tell while I'm prepared for...
It wasn't one listed.
There wasn't one listed? Okay.
Yeah, so I really didn't check. But if you're watching on YouTube, which is where this came from, just type in Tarzan Goto, Cactus Jack, and just split up in three parts.
Yeah, well, there will be links to the YouTube pages on both the
awesome. That's awesome.
The Segunda Kaita post and the Place to Be Nation post, so people will be able to watch this match. I am going to do a little internet research, which you would think I would have done before the show. I had this all prepared. 10:55.
This is a work in progress. So I mean, you're in your infancy stages of doing these shows.
I'm sure that when this gets... when I do more of these, it'll certainly get more professional because that is how traditionally things have worked in my life. They get more professional as they go along. It doesn't, and this will not. All right, but this is October 5th, 1995. So this was, I think, your peak Cactus Jack.
Yeah, he was, this is the time period where he had turned heel in ECW and was doing the... like the Eric Bischoff love gimmick where he was not wrestling extreme. He was like trying to do submission holds and mat wrestling.
was that at this point in 95 or was that later in 95?
No, yeah, because we had talked about on the Between the Sheets episode with Brian Last that came out last week. That was in August of 95 where he started his turn.
Okay.
So, yeah, so now he's deep into it.
When I rewatched this match, it got me in a little bit of a Cactus Jack promo, like spiral on YouTube. Where I watched a bunch of those, the Cactus Jack ECW promos, which are still like some of the best things. I mean, I think you kind of forget because for certainly the last 10 years, nobody's lamer than Mick Foley, right? Like, he's a guy who is really, really, really lame at this point and was lame for large parts of his WWE run. And, you know, you get so much of that and you kind of forget that at one point, like, he was the best.
Yeah, I think the last time he was in true Foley form was probably setting up the Flair match at SummerSlam where, you know, they were playing off that the real feud.
Was that the before or after the first ECW pay-per-view?
That would have been four.
Because that was, he was pretty good in that.
Yeah.
It was a promo that he did on Raw that was kind of in the style of the stuff from the 90s. And that match was pretty good.
Yeah, he's had his moments, but yeah, totally. As a whole, yeah, he's been, you know, running on fumes for years.
Yeah, I mean, in most of his WWE run was pretty lame. I mean, the Sox stuff, the comedy stuff with Vince, I think, went over fine. But you're not ever going to want to rewatch any of that stuff.
Whereas, not actively.
you would want to rewatch 95 Cactus Jack and ECW, or 95. This is Cactus Jack and, I guess, IWA. And holy shit, this match. You know, Karzen Goto is a guy who I think for a long time, when I first started doing wrestling reviewing on the internet, which was 20 odd years ago, because I'm an old man.
We're getting old.
Yeah. Holy shit. So I sort of talked a fair amount of trash against Tarzan Goto. I seem to remember at one point coining him Tarzan Scroto. A true bit of legendary comedy. That's still really funny.
But that's mid-90s humor, folks.
Yeah, there was Tarzan Scroto. Because I think at one point he got super fat.
Oh, and, yeah. Yeah.
And you're kind of enamored with your Hanmas and your Yamakawas for your deathmatch dudes. But I kind of want to revisit even fat Tarzan Goto. Because Tarzan Goto, prime Tarzan Goto, I think is one of your better garbage wrestlers of all time. That may be a little hyperbolic.
He was legendary. I mean,
he was so good.
Yeah, when I first started looking at, you know, tape trading, you know, stuff on the internet, you know, guys like him and Matsunaga and Pogo and Onita, they were like the four, you know, legends of Japanese hardcore wrestling that were on just about every comp tape.
Yeah.
You know, you would find one of those guys or all of them on some comp tape somewhere.
And I think Goto may age the best out of that guy. So Onita ages pretty great too, just because Onita's so much of Onita is like this really, really like dramatic, you know, very sort of emo stuff. And I think that ages pretty good. But I think Goto ages way better than Matsunaga or Pogo stinks. I think he's kind of always stunk. But like Goto stuff, when you watch, like when I watched some matches recently, man, that guy is aggressive and, like, you know, will go after it. Like, he works like a very, like, intense, you know, almost like a garbage Stan Hansen, where he just is constantly moving forward and attacking and punching and clotheslining and kicking somebody in the head. I mean, he goes right after people and will take a beating, although in this match, for the most part, this was Cactus Jack just absolutely taking crazy lunatic bump after crazy lunatic bump. I mean, it was nuts how many, what kind of, the kind of punishment he was taking in this match for being like a random match in the Japanese indies in front of not that many people.
Yeah, he was diving in the railings. The Goto press slamming it from the top rope to the floor was insane.
Yeah. It was basically the Flair bump.
Yeah, to the Flair floor.
So he pressed it directly to the floor. Yeah, you're like watching, and, you know, and that was, you know, he does a full, like, head first roll down a balcony stairs. He does like a nasty plunge dive where he just flies into the guardrail with blind.
Yeah.
He does the hip buster elbow from like the second rope.
Yeah, on the floor.
much less at what, you know, getting a bottle smashed over his head, getting stabbed in the head with a knife. Was that a machete? What the hell was Tarzan stabbing
it with? I thought it looked like an ice pick.
Yeah, it was pretty kind of
loose. Because it had like a handle on there, and it looked like something you would see in the Sharon Stone's bed in Basic Instinct.
Yeah, it might have been an ice pick. I thought it might have been a machete. But it was pretty crazy, and he bleeds a lot. He bleeds like he got stabbed in the head with a machete or an ice pick or a knife.
And we're not talking about all the chair shots, which, you know, the Corkin chairs are, you know, aren't the steel chairs, but the chair shots and the punches.
Oh yeah, they were.
I mean, that was some great punches thrown in this
both
match.
Both laid in some great punches. I mean, this match—if this was an ECW arena match, this would have been legendary.
It would have been one of the best matches of the year in ECW. No,
yeah, I mean, I think people, this would have ended up on, you know, the WWE DVDs. I mean, this would have been the one that, this would have been one of the matches that would have been like legendary. But honestly, I don't, until I watched it for the first time, I think in like 2008 or 2009, I don't ever remember seeing it before. Like, this is something that missed me in 95. And I'm somebody who made a Cactus Jack comp as the very first comp tape I ever made.
Yeah, I'm, like I told you before the show, I like only seen like clips of this on a commercial tape, I think, or something. And yeah, the one, you know, the clips you mainly saw was like the bottle, mainly all the weapon stuff. But yeah. One thing that, you know, we got to talk about with this match too is Cactus. Even, I mean, he broke out some wrestling holds, like the Fujiwara armbar counter of the lariat, breaking out a sleeper hold and a grounded sleeper hold. So he was doing some wrestling stuff too. Going
back to it, I actually thought when he put the sleeper on in the crowd that he was going to do the "I put a sleeper on and the guy falls back on me" spot he used to do with Vader, except on stairs. I was like, man, don't do that. So I really thought that he was going to get full weight slam kidney first on some stairs, which luckily he didn't do. That felt like what was going on. Because wasn't the story that spot that Vader did on him in their Halloween Havoc match, that was him trying to hurt himself so bad that he would go on disability?
Yeah, I remember hearing that story. I don't know how much truth there is to that.
I think he had the book.
Yeah, he was at that time period, he kind of like had a death wish in a lot of ways, what he was doing when the Vader matches. So, I don't know.
About 92 to about 90, till he went to the, I mean, there was certainly some death wish moments in the WWE too, but I mean, he wasn't taking this kind of beating on regular shows or something like that at the WWE. I mean, he would save it for big moments. I mean, he couldn't, right? I mean, you know, there's a time limit to this kind of. I mean, even if you watch like current Necro Butcher, he's not doing the kind of shit he was doing, you know, 4 or 5 years ago anymore either.
Oh no, you got this style and the aerial style, you can only do for so long before you have to start working smarter.
Right.
You know, guys like Amazing Red, who is making his comeback now, you know, can't do all the flying stuff that he was doing in 2001. So you have to work smarter.
14 fucking years later, Amazing Red's old now.
Yeah, I know.
He's going to be 33.
Yeah. Right? Oh, another thing about this. Yeah. Getting back to this match real quick. One thing I loved about this match too was the fans turned mid-match on Goto and started booing him and started cheering Cactus when Goto was just beating the shit out of him with bottles. I thought that was really cool.
I mean, it's hard to work this match if you're Goto, work the match as a face. I mean, you're trying to murder this guy, right?
Yeah.
You're stabbing him with a knife. You know, and Cactus Jack is in this match. I mean, he gets beaten on for most of it. He gets some comebacks and does some moves and stuff. But I mean, this is one of those Cactus Jack matches where you're coming away being impressed with the beating he's taking, not with like the beating he's dishing out.
Exactly.
Because he was never, I mean, that was the thing about him. He was never a guy who really whooped anybody's ass.
Oh, no. He's more known for the ass whippings he took.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, it's interesting. Your recent comparison of Necro Butcher, which I made earlier, and I think that they had a similar career. Obviously, Necro Butcher wasn't on as big of a stage, obviously. But, I mean, he was a guy who would actually, you know, punch a square in the eye and whoop your ass a little bit in addition to taking huge beatings. Cactus was a little more of a bottom. Those kind of things. He was a little more of the masochist.
Yes.
Like, but, yeah, this is people. I think this is a match that I think, look, if you're going to listen to this podcast, you get a Schneider comp. I mean, you're a guy who likes violent shit, I think. I mean, there's vampires. I would imagine if I have a fan base, it's a fan base of vampires. So this is right there in the wheelhouse. And I really think a match that a lot of people have not seen and is kind of the idea behind a digging in the great thing is here, find this great thing which somehow missed people.
And the deal is there, yeah, there's blood, but there's not a lot of blood. There's enough blood to give it the cred that it needed for IWA Japan. And right. It's not, you know, one of your death match type deals where lots of, you know, other crazy shit going on. I mean, like you said, yeah, we had an ice pick and we had a bottle. But I mean, wasn't nobody blowing each other up or?
I love the standards we have. There was all that crazy. I mean, sure, we had an ice pack.
You know, it wasn't like Matsunaga with piranhas and scorpions and shit like that. So, and this was probably, and like I said, you know, 1995. This is pretty tame for Japanese hardcore wrestling.
Yeah, but, true. This is more of like a street fight.
This is like Memphis, and you know, both men had Memphis backgrounds. Goto, of course, worked there, teaming with Akio Saito, and of course, Cactus was there with Gary Young. So, yeah, you this match would have definitely fit in on a Mid-South Coliseum card, and probably in like maybe 1991 as your third from the top match. You know, with Jarrett and Fuller headlining against the Moondogs.
Yeah, and because they stabbed each other with shit in those matches too. I mean,
yeah.
If there was any individual moment of this match that wouldn't have fit in a, I mean, it would have been people would have remembered it.
Yeah, exactly.
This would have been a remembered match if it had happened, certainly, unless, you know, it didn't get taped or whatever. I mean, I'm sure there are matches that are this great and this crazy that are just, you know, sitting in a vault or sitting in nowhere and never got taped. But
yeah, it's a damn shame. Still,
we did on our F the World section of when we did the Memphis podcast together.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
All right. Any other? Yeah, so this, I think people are going to really dig this. I like I said, the links are, YouTube links are on there. And I think it really is a thing that will kind of remember, why at this period, Cactus Jack was my favorite wrestler. He was in 1995. He was the guy that, if you ask me who your favorite wrestler is, it's him. And this is why, and this was really around the last point it was.
Yeah, he had that. That's the last time he had that aura about him. Yeah. Because, you know, he went to WWF the next year and working as Mankind. And, yeah, he did some crazy stuff there, but, yeah, it wasn't the same. And and it never was the same.
Yeah. And this, yeah. And so I think, you know, this, he was the guy that got me into, like, tape trading, you know, and into this whole, I mean, he's the entry exam for this whole ridiculous, the blog and this podcast and the amount of time in my life I've dedicated to this nonsense. I mean, I was a huge wrestling fan, but you know, I would get the ECW TV show in my dorm when I was in college. And when that happened, it was like, well, let me find a way on the internet to get more of this stuff.
Yeah.
So I got some ECW tapes from a guy and he had like a crap newsletter. I don't even remember his name. And then all of a sudden I started to get more on the internet and then, you know,
then everybody has their guy, like, you know, like you have with Cactus. Everybody has that person that they, you know, start out with trying to find out more stuff from.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So what you were doing this in the order I sent you in, so I don't remember what order I sent the stuff to you in. So you're gonna
The next one would be the tag.
Would be the oh yes. Still in Japan. Speaking of violence, maybe we should mix it up. Let's talk about Dean Malenko versus Bobby.
All right, we'll do that.
Before we go straight to horrific violence.
I think we need to save that for the main event, probably.
Yeah, let's save the tag to the main event. It's the main event. one of the things that I liked doing on Schneider comps, and I had, I think, probably one or two of these on every one of them, is try to find like a weird TV match that would have missed people might not have missed when it happened because everybody wasn't taping the pro or taping worldwide or taping jacked or taping metal. And so this was a Bobby Eaton versus Dean Malenko. Is there a date on this, Chris?
I think the air date was 4/27/97.
Okay. So
who knows when it would have been taped because it was a Disney taping.
Because this was a Disney taping match, so that it could have been 6 months before that.
Yeah.
But so this is like one of those kind of weird hidden matches. At this point, I mean, could this be the last great or last even really good Bobby Eaton match? I mean, 97 was pretty late for watchable Bobby Eaton.
Ooh, did he have stuff in 98? I kind of want to say he had some matches in 98 that were pretty damn good. Television matches.
Chris?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Oh, okay. Sorry. It was weird. Yeah. So I couldn't hear.
Yeah, so, yeah, he had some pretty damn good matches in 98.
What?
He had some pretty damn good matches in 98.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, from what I remember, I think there was some worldwide matches. Although it could be 97. Okay. You know, I haven't watched that stuff since it first aired, so it kind of maybe would run together. But yeah, this is like the end of the peak Eaton.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're far from peak Eaton.
Well, yeah, end of Eaton as a solid TV worker, I guess you could say, something like that.
I mean, your peak last, what would be your last peak Eaton year?
92.
Yeah, 92. This is 5 years after that. It's kind of like Malenko's another guy who I think really was hit and miss, hindsight-wise, in this period. I mean, I think he was a guy who kind of had this rep from ECW as, you know, he was your first real guy who worked the technical wrestler as a gimmick thing.
Yeah.
Where, like, my gimmick is that I'm a really great wrestler. And that, and sometimes that fools people into thinking they're a really great wrestler.
Yeah, they did a great job of pushing him in that way. That's one of, you know, Paul at that time period, you know, he did that job. He was pushing Public Enemy as this credible deal. He had Taz is the probably the biggest one ever, making him a badass considering how his size. Yeah, Paul, I mean, he can feed the bullshit. Shane Douglas, yeah. Paul could feed the bullshit, boy, and everybody bought it.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think – who would be the worst actual wrestler to have – this is a bit of an aside. The worst actual wrestler to have I'm a technical wrestler as their gimmick and fool people into thinking they were good.
Oh, wow.
Because this is a good gimmick a lot of people have had, the great wrestler gimmick. And who is the one who's the poopiest at it? I'm going to put some contenders here. Mike Graham, I think, had that gimmick.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he was an earlier one. He wasn't really your internet version of that gimmick.
Yeah.
Storm would be a classic example of a guy.
Oh, yeah.
Fooled people into thinking he was any good.
Dan Severin.
What's that?
Dan Severin. Even though he was really good in real life, he was a terrible professional wrestler.
Yeah, although he was more like a fake shooter gimmick. I don't know if he had the same sort of, because to work your technical wrestler gimmick, part of it is this idea of, you know, I'm going to be a guy who's being held down and should be pushed more. You know, it's a meta a little more than Dan Severn. Nobody ever said Dan Severn's a guy who they want who's getting held down that they should stop pushing Hogan and push Dan Severn matches. Where you'd hear that about guys like Malenko or Storm. There are some ROH ones. Matt Stryker,
the one from Les Thatcher.
Les Thatcher, your Les Thatcher, Matt Stryker would be one. Chad Collier wasn't.
Chad Collier, yeah.
Then a bunch of those guys in ROH.
Yeah, and then you had guys who could have had that gimmick, but were given like shitty gimmicks, like Barry Horowitz.
Yeah.
He should have had that technical wrestler gimmick because he really was a damn good technical wrestler.
Sure.
But they treated him like a damn jobber.
He was your Malenko. He was a Malenko trainee, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's fun. But so Malenko's a guy who I think had his moments, but probably was one of your more overrated dudes from that period.
Yeah, totally. But I like Dean.
Yes. This is like a really, really fun TV match, like a really good, like Malenko performance. He doesn't really do as much like I'm going to lie here in a knee bar stuff. It kind of moves nicely for like your 6 minute television match and like a lot of really cool moments in it. Thought about this match. I mean, this was going to be, you're going to love your other matches on this. I think are universally loved. This I thought was more of like a cool discovery.
Well, yeah, the thing is with this is Eaton. Malenko's trying to out-wrestle him early and was doing it. So Eaton comes back and just throws that right hand
as
the equalizer, which was awesome. That was, you know, his right-hand punch is one of the best ones ever in wrestling. And that just showed Malenko, like, yeah, motherfucker, you know, you might can out-wrestle me, but I have all this experience working this Southern Slugfest style, and all I need is just one right hand. And that can, you know, take care of anything you've got.
Yeah, and I also really liked Eaton likes Matt stuff here. Like, there was a point where Malenko put him in, like, a knee bar, And it's just lying there, eating as a guy like as a smart worker. All right, I'm gonna try. Can I pull the ankle this way to get it out? No, that's not gonna work. He tries like five different exploratory counters before finally rolling to the ropes.
Yeah.
He does that right before laying in that right hand. But it was actually kind of a cool little, like, eating as a guy. It's like, all right, I can, you know, I worked Memphis in 1980 when Billy Robinson came in and they made us work the mat. I know what I'm supposed to do here.
But the thing is, during that point of the match, though, the commentary was all about the NWO, which was, you know, in that time period, that was like the dark cloud over most of your television. Even in a match like this, where it has no NWO ramifications.
Yeah.
All they were talking about for like the first half of this match was the NWO.
Oh, well, watch this on mute. This is my advice to everybody who's going to watch this. Put up the link on Daily Bunch. Watch it. Play some music. But you know, go get the Ludacris DJ Premier produced album and play that. I'm trying to listen to 97 WCW commentary. Who is even on commentary on this?
Scott Hudson and Larry Zbyszko.
Oh, that's not a terrible team.
No, and then when they focus on the match, they do a pretty good a job. But yeah, like I said, it's just, you know, and the story is, it's like they were talking about Malenko and Benoit at the time had been feuding, but now they are coming together, you know, in respect, you know, to fight the NWO.
Yeah,
you know that more groups of wrestlers WCW. That had been rivals were starting to come together now. So that's what they were doing. So they were actually telling a story, but of course it was about the NWO.
And not about Bobby Eaton doing a really great grounded Bobby.
Yeah, he was a bit about.
Like, I honestly think, like, watching this match, you know, I watched it a couple times, it was so short. Eaton may have been your better mat wrestler in this match, which is weird. But, like, I thought Eaton was doing more interesting shit on the match and the parts where this turned into, like, a Maestro's match. You really think of Bobby Eaton as your guy to work your WCW Pro Maestro's match? But he was reading a bunch of cool shit on the mat.
Yeah, he was getting in and out, definitely. Yeah, and it was frustrating Malenko.
Malenko had a nice punch. It was an interesting match where both guys showed some strengths in what you would assume would have been the other guy's strength. Like, yeah. Malenko threw a pretty good right hand. Bobby Eaton hit some really cool shit on the mat.
And I like the way the match finished, too, because, you know, Dean Malenko's match is usually finished with, you know, the clover leaf, and he would do, like, his little rib buster spot across the knee. He didn't do none of that stuff. He used a jackknife cradle.
Yeah.
You know, it was a little flash, a little deal. So, you know, he didn't decisively put Eaton away. He just won with a little cradle.
Yeah. It's fun. It's, I think, a really, like, you know, the kind of thing that you search through a bunch of WCW pro and worldwide matches, and you want to find this. You want to find, like, a seven-minute match between two cool wrestlers you didn't know really ever wrestled each other. And a lot of times it doesn't work. A lot of times you're pro on paper pro matches, like, don't deliver. Like, oh, I was really excited about, you know, Fit Finley versus Liz Mark Jr. This just wasn't very good. Or, you know, this is like, oh, Ming versus Super Callow. And no, it sucked. But this is like an example of, like, on paper, you might be like, oh, I could see this being good. And it actually turned out to be really good.
Or like your, like a Viano versus an Armstrong match or something.
Right, although I remember those being pretty
good. They were actually pretty good.
Viano's and your Armstrong seemed to, those guys could have, some Puebla indie should have run that as a pair match.
Mobile, Alabama should have run that.
They should have won in Mobile, Alabama.
It's on the Gulf of Mexico.
That's right. Guadalajara.
Yeah.
You know, you could have Brad, Bob, and
you got Scott and Steve.
Scott and Steve. I think you'd have to have Bullet Bob, though.
Yeah, he could go against Ray Mendoza.
The best thing where he loses the Bullet mask to avoid anybody getting their head shaved.
Yeah,
and you have that BS finish. He loses the Bullet mask to Viato 4, and then you got to bring the families in for a, you know, one final blow off.
Yeah, you could do you can bring Ray Mendoza, you know, and have him and Bullet Bob do an angle together.
Yeah, talk about perfect synergy. Talk about transition. Talk to me about Viato's versus Brazos, Chris.
One of the legendary feuds. Even though we had, you know, that garbage match at Triple Mania, you know, a couple weeks ago, where, you know, Viano Teixeira's retirement and Psycho Clown, Brazo de Plata's son in there. Yeah, this is a family feud that has went 30 something. What's that?
I didn't watch that match, so to me, it's great.
Okay, yeah. Never watch that match. This feud has been awesome for 30 years. You know, I mean, it's the two of the big families of Lucha. This is like your, two of your big mob families in New York, you know, going to battle for years and years and years. You know, you got, you know, Shadito Cruz and Ray Mendoza, you know, the patriarchs, and then all the sons. Oh, man, it's just been awesome. And then the mass match, you know, in 87. Oh, man, like I said, there's so much, you know, backstory to this feud. You can do this feud. As long as there's children and grandchildren and whatever, you can do this feud forever.
Yeah. I mean, you'd always see it, like, show up. Like, you watch an IWRG show from, like, 2002, and it'd be, like, a pair. It wasn't always even the good Brazos. It'd be like, ooh, Platino and Super Brazo. Oh, watch this.
Yeah. You know you're going to get some blood out of those guys. So that's one thing.
And so this match that we're talking about is Brazo Jr., who I think is the son of El Brazo?
Yes.
He's the son of El Brazo versus Cortez, who's Viano 4's kid?
Five.
Viano 5's kid.
He looks like his dad. I mean, he's built like his dad in a lot of ways. Like,
although, you know, the Vianos are all kind of built like that's the Viano build. There's no city Vianos.
Yeah, true, but his dad was kind of like more thicker than 4 was, and of course 3.
Okay. Yeah.
And Brazo Jr. is not as fat as some of the other Brazos, but he's getting there.
Yeah, he's a little skinnier. And so this was one of my favorite matches of last year. This was from 2014. It was like one of those things, like every once in a while I'll be like bored and watching TV, and I'll just start like, you know, going through YouTube and looking for random shit. And I kind of like came across this match. This is the first time you watched this match, Chris, or did you watch it did I make you watch this in 2014?
I've seen this match because I subscribed to the channel.
Oh, okay.
I've seen this. The one thing about this match is kind of hard, but it really, considering it's all complete, is it's taped from a very far distance.
Yeah.
But still, the fact that this is a complete match from Mexico, which, you know, is getting more common these days on YouTube, which is good, but it's a treat no matter how it was filmed.
And what I loved about this match is that this is a type of match that you just don't really see very much anymore. It's like a dead style. Because this felt to me like an 80s style, like a Puestas match. Like this is the way, this would what it be look like if you had a match between these guys' dads.
Yeah, and it was a title match for the Campeonato del Ser.
Right. So, this doesn't work like a title match.
No, it's worked more like a mass match in a lot of ways.
I mean, you know, there's a very specific... We'll talk a little bit about the sort of differences how those matches are really worked traditionally different. Because for a long time, and you know, you're the historical expert here, long time the title matches had very specific rules about how they had to be worked, right?
Yeah, that was the technical match of the feud. You know, your title matches is where you see more of the holds, submissions, more of Lucha Libre as an art form than your hair and mask matches, because that's like the culmination of the feud, and that's where you get the blood and the guts. I mean, when we did the 80s set, there were, you know, feuds there where you had both kinds of matches, so you were able to get that style from the same people, you know. And I mean, it's a great contrast, and it's something that's sorely lacking in wrestling today, where everything is the same in a lot of ways, and then when you get that feud blow off, you know, it's not different than any other normal match. And the mask and hair matches, I mean, God, you would see so much blood spilled and, you know, mask getting ripped to shreds. I mean, it was a special deal.
Yeah, and this was kind of interesting because this was a title match, but this was a this was work like a mask match. Like, this was a fight.
It's a family feud. So yeah. I guess that has something to do with it, too.
Yeah.
And the one thing about the, another thing about this venue was it kind of reminded me it was of like a fellowship hall in a church where it would be held at, you know, where you, the, when they're not doing wrestling matches, they got people in having the covered dish dinners at, on Sundays and stuff like that. You know, you can get like a banana pudding or something from grandma. But on this day,
hopefully they've got, they've got a good maintenance staff to clean up the pools of Brazo and Cortez's blood before they, before they brought in Sunday dinner. Because holy moly, both guys.
And Brazo Jr. wore white.
Yes.
So you, that when, one thing, when a luchador wears white in a match like this, more often than not, you're going to get heavy juice.
Yeah.
So he fulfilled the destiny there.
So I love the sort of structure of this match. It really felt to me a lot like, you know, obviously it's not at the level of Sangre Chicano versus MS1, which is one of the three or four greatest wrestling matches of all time. But it was worked that way. It was like very, it wasn't back and forth to begin with. It was Cortez comes out and starts whooping his ass.
He had a nice power slam that he won the first fight. Like a Buzz Sawyer type power slam in a way. Maybe not as flashy, but it did the job. And he kicked the shit out of Brazo Jr. that first fall.
Yeah, and then you had the thing where he ducks the punch and then the big overhand.
Yeah.
And then he's over. In very much that same way of in Sangre Chicana MS1, where it's one-sided until he gets the one big shot to kind of clean it up. And the part where he takes Cortez and just starts trying to open up his head like a coconut on the top of the turnbuckle. I mean, it's like he's very focused. It reminds me a little like when my when Ruthie, my puppy, gets her hands on like a new toy.
Yeah.
I'm going to spend the next 7 or 8 minutes focusedly trying to rip this stuffed animal apart. And it really almost felt like that was what Brazo Jr. was trying to do with Cortez's head. I need to see what's inside here. I'm opening this up. It really was like, just, man, that is a way to take over on a match.
Yeah, and then, you know, they went to the floor and he just started posting him around the ring. You know, he did three different posts. He didn't hit all four, but he was just like posting him like a madman. And in between post shots, he was biting at the cut and working the cut like, I mean, like he was a serial killer in a way. You know, he just was going off on this dude. Then the chair shots.
Yeah.
I mean, throwing chairs, you know, which has been a theme, you know, I guess of the show so far. It's fun chair shots, and they were just pounding each other with it.
Yeah. And, you know, and also just the Brazo Jr., who's the technical in this? But I guess nobody's the technical in this kind of feud, right?
Brazo Jr.'s the technical. Yeah, Cortez and Kevin, the brothers, they normally work as Rudos.
But I mean, when you have a family feud like this, nobody's a technical.
Oh, of course not. Yeah.
Exactly. Look, this is, there's two, who knows who started this?
Yeah. Yeah, it's two guys who hate each other, and they're just going to do what they got to do to win.
Like the parts where he's just stomping on his knee, too. I mean,
oh yeah, he was really working that leg over.
I've watched other Brazo Jr., and it's like, you know, it's not like this is the discovery of a great dude who's great other places. This is like his career match.
Yeah, a lot of the kids right now, I mean, they got some room to grow, especially Aviano Tercero's kids, who they're really young. But the Brazo Jr. and some of Porky's kids, and you know, they're still finding their way. But yeah, Toto, this is easily the best match of Brazo Jr.'s career so far.
Yeah, Cortez, I haven't seen this. There's not nearly as much of him available.
Yeah,
that made me want, while watching this match, I was like, man, I want to see more Cortez.
Yeah, they've worked in IWRG a lot of not recently, but really like a 2013, 2014, and I mean, they were okay, but nothing special. Oh, one thing I mentioned about Brazo Jr. was I loved like the Gino Hernandez tribute elbow drop from the top rope.
Yeah, it's great.
Great spot.
That was fun. This match really did make me want to see, though, Viotto. You said it's five, right?
Yeah.
Five and his kids versus Dean and Easton Navarro.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, any Navarro stuff is going, you know, is going to be.
But like, how good would that be? Or Viotto or versus Blue Panther and his kids?
You know, five is retired. He came out of retirement for that Trevina match. But yeah, he's pretty much retired right now.
Yeah.
Really, the only Viotto that wrestles is four.
It's wrestling. It's wrestling.
Yeah, but he actually has mainly stuck to his retirement.
Okay.
Yeah, because he's
yeah, watched about five 2015 Santiago matches. It's wrestling.
Well, yeah, and Ciancaras is, you know, he works off and on too.
Yeah.
But he mainly sticks to his job of being a dentist and his gimmick on Facebook of posting 70s R&B to talk to the ladies.
What?
Yes. Viotto Quinto loves like Al Green and Marvin Gaye. He'll talk to the ladies on Facebook.
Yeah,
he's trying to get it in.
That is spectacular.
Bobby Womack, he loves that type of stuff. Johnny Taylor.
Well, shit.
Yeah, he's a kind of guy that you would see at like a cookout wearing the sandals, you know, with some khaki shorts and his polo tucked in his shirt.
Or maybe one of those like Gaia Veras.
Or smoking a pack of Cools or something, you know.
Nice. That is great. So maybe he's really the real father of a thousand sons.
He's not Mascot Onion Dos Mil, who everything I see of him on Facebook, he's wearing a suit. Nice. So, I mean, he's always in shirt and tie and coat. I mean, you could tell that this dude.
Luchadors are you friends with on Facebook?
It's not as much as being friends. I am friends with those guys, but it's about, you know, that's basically where the research comes from for the Lucha Report, all the posters.
Oh,
it's
okay.
From Facebook.
Gotcha.
So yeah, I mean, I go to all kinds of pages.
Like, I got friends with a bunch of people I went to high school with. I went to high school with, and like some ex coworkers. And Volkan. Volkan's the only wrestler.
It's
a fine guy. If you're going to have one wrestler friend, to be able to be Volkan.
Well, yeah, of course. But yeah, you look at my friends list, and it's full of Lucha Libre guys and like regular people.
Humans and luchadors?
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, let's get to the main event here.
Oh, God.
Now, you've never seen this match before, is that right?
I mean, I've seen plenty of footin' over the years, but I've never seen this match. Somehow it slipped me.
I'm shocked, because this is, I think, your best footin' match. I mean, there isn't, you said you've seen plenty. I mean, there's not that much. I think there's like 10 shows.
Well,
tape or 7 shows that exist on tape.
Yeah, I mean, but still, I mean, I guess...
There was this great period. 2008, I think, was the last period I really loved current wrestling. I mean, there's still stuff now that I like, and there's, you know, style, you know, matches here or there. But there was this period where in 2010 where you had monthly Futen available on DVD through various circumstances. And IWRG was at its, like, that was your period of your Terry versus Gringo's feud. So you had these two like things that were just so awesome, and you could get like, you know, semi-regularly to get super excited about modern wrestling. And I don't think at any point since then has there been stuff that I mean, I still got an Evolve show and enjoy that fine, and you know, some of the, you know, indie lucha that's around now is good, but nothing like 2010 was the last moment where, man, I am about some stuff going on right now. Now I'm about random dudes posting previously unseen All Japan stuff from the 80s and NWA classics. That's what I'm all about now.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, that All Japan channel, well, yeah, basically mainly All Japan channel that you're talking about, it's like a gold mine recently of stuff. So
the last week, that's been – eventually I'm going to do a show probably with some of that stuff for digging the crates too, but – so let's talk about this match. Is Daisuke Ikeda, Takahiro Oba versus Kengo Mishima and Makoto Hashi from October 24th, 2010. And man alive,
And by this time, Hashi had done left Noah.
Yeah, Hashi had left Noah.
And if you remember him from Noah, he's a little bit thicker, and he has more hair, and it's not blonde.
And he's not. He wasn't doing this in Noah.
No, he was not doing this in Noah. Ikeda's a guy, though. He looks the same, not 1998, 2010. Yeah. I mean, he's a guy that basically does not age.
Which you would think he would age, because he's a guy who does not wrestle a style of wrestling that you would think would be something that would not cause you to age. It feels like he should have aged 10 years in this match.
Well, you know, him and Hashi are giving each other brain damage in this match. I mean, it's the last 5 to 10 minutes of this match is complete insanity.
Yeah. So this is like a thing that, I mean, I watched all during, this is kind of a Futen tag style match where you often have like them do a fair amount of back and forth stuff and mixing up matchups for the first, like, you know, 16 or so minutes of the match. And then almost always they do this, where it's like the last 6 minutes are basically a singles match.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the other two guys are on the apron, and you got two guys who are going to come in, and they're going to go through, a six-minute, usually horrifically violent singles match.
Boy, that true here.
It's the most horrifically violent of those, I think.
Yeah, and this is insane.
So let's talk a little about, before we start talking about that, let's talk a little about the other guys in this match. Oba and Moschino.
Oba, I love Oba. Oba has this charisma about him. And I love, the pitch slap he gave Hashi after Hashi stomped on his foot was awesome. I mean, he just paintbrushed him in the face.
Yeah, it was so good. He reminds me of kind of Alexander Otsuka. I mean, there have been 5 Oba matches on tape, maybe complete. I mean, he's a guy who I don't remember where he was before Futen. And then
I'm trying to remember if he worked for Tamura's group. But he did MMA's fights. I mean, he's a real fighter.
Oh, okay.
And I love how he claps before he locks up.
Yeah.
I mean, claps, locks up. And one other thing in the early part of this match, too, is, you know, you were getting the yellow cards. Like, Ikeda got a yellow card for yelling at Hashi. Yeah. Hashi got a yellow card for refusing a break on the ropes. Ikeda got a yellow card for what I call meme mugging Mishima on the ropes. I mean, yeah, they were getting yellow cards early. Then the referee was like, fuck it. I'm just going to let these guys go.
Yeah. And I Oba's like, so he's like a guy who's not a striker. Everybody else in this match is a striker. But Oba's like a grappler. He's a guy who will throw you and take you down and twist your legs. This is what I think about the Otsuka comparison. Because he's not a guy, like Otsuka was never a guy who was going to kick your head off in battle arts. He was a guy who's going to throw you.
Yeah, and like when he was working Hashi on the mat and they were like trading holds, that was pretty damn awesome stuff.
Yeah, it really was Hashi, what the hell, right? I mean, he's a guy, he was like a comedy guy. And I mean, he had some fun stuff with Akiyama, but I mean, this was like a complete revelation when I saw this match. And I don't know if he ever really ever did anything like this that would, I mean, this might be it. This is like your Hashi match where you're going to put one thing on the wall of fame. It's this. Because, you know, I don't know. He may have other Futen. You know, the Futen stuff exists and wasn't, I'm sure, taped because it's Japan, but had never made its way over here. So he may have other things in Futen that were this good, but.
Well, you know, Hashi and Noah, he was kind of like a poor man's Tenzan there, where he was doing the Mongolian chops and all that type of stuff, and he had like the hard head gimmick, which came into play in this match.
Yeah. I mean, he had a hard head gimmick, but it was kind of a gimmick, right? I mean, he was like a guy, he wasn't like this. I mean, he wasn't doing this to people. I mean, this match, so the match basically had exchanges from all 4 guys. And really cool exchanges from all 4 guys. And then the match clears out. And it's Hashi and Ikeda. And they have a moment earlier where they are exchanging headbutts. And Hashi opens up a cut on Ikeda's head with a headbutt.
He busts him up in hard way. Yeah.
Section of you know, brutality. And so I thought, I remember I reread my review of this when I wrote it initially. And I thought the thing I kind of described, and I saw this again, it was really cool because Ikeda was this guy who, you know, in Futen and really his whole career, is the guy who will who will be a knockout artist, right? Who will come in and he will kick the shit out of you.
Yeah, he's known for his kicks. You know, whenever he fought Ishikawa in Battle Arts, Orozco, I mean, they were the wrestlers. I mean, they could do that stuff too, but they were more your technical wrestler types. Ikeda was the striker. He was the kicker.
He's like the guy. And I the comparison I made when I did the review, and I think it really applies, is he's like a heavyweight knockout artist boxer. Who his entire career, what he did was he came in the ring and cleaned people out. And with Hashi, he's run up to a guy who hits harder than him.
Yeah.
And now he doesn't know what to do. That's another thing he can do. He doesn't have a jab he can throw. He doesn't have, you know, he can't try to counterpunch with him. He's a slugger and he's running to a slugger with heavier hands. I mean, you see this when you're a guy who watched some Friday night fights. Do you get to hear Teddy Atlas say, you know, this is a guy, Ikeda is a guy with, he's got some options, but these are the options he's got. He's only got one way to do it. So he doesn't have a second thing he can do. He's a brawler. He's going to brawl. He's a heavy hitter. He's going to hit heavy. And if it requires him to go down, die on his sword, he's going to do it. Because Hashi is just brutalizing him with these headbutts. I mean, his forehead looks like ground beef.
Yes, it does. It looks like something that you would put on the grill.
Yeah, and it's from these just like, and they're, you could hear like the sounds of them, and they're not like, it's really like a disturbing noise.
Yeah, there's no commentary for this match, so all you hear is the sounds in the ring. And the crowd at Futen shows are like 30 to 40 people.
Yeah.
So you're not getting crowd reactions that much either.
You're just hearing the like...
Yeah.
The sound of like, this like overripe melon being dropped off a balcony.
And let's not forget Mashimo in this either. Mashimo was, you know, he was countering Ikeda's kicks, and he was throwing some wicked kicks as well. I mean, he was really tearing Ikeda up at one point.
Yeah, their kick exchange. I mean, you feel that there's a great Ikeda Mashimo end of attack, you know, probably happened as well with those two.
Yeah, Mashima's a guy who had chances over the years. You know, of course, he's K-Dojo, Takamichi Noku Train. I mean, he had chances. He worked here and there in New Japan. He's worked other places. He's a guy that never could get that break he needed. I thought he was a guy that could have been bigger, you know, over the years. And he really looked good here, too.
Yeah. So there's the great moment in this where Ikeda gets hit with a couple of really nasty headbutts, and he kind of stumbles back into his corner to tag out, and Oba slaps him in the face. And it was really this thing, it's like, fuck, you're not tagging out. You are who you are. You're Daisuke Ikeda. This is Futen. This is your promotion. You're going to go in there and whoop that dude's ass. We're not tagging out.
Yeah.
Get the fuck back in there and kick the shit out of him. Like, you know, the way like the great Santini would send his kid out to get his ass kicked.
Yes, the Bobby Knight school of tag team wrestling.
Yeah.
What we got here.
And there's a moment where you can look at, you can see Oba like regrets it. like, oh no. He's going to die. He's going to die in this ring.
Yeah. Well, he looked like he was going to.
What?
It looked like he was going to. This was like this concussion for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Boatman. Because Hashi ended up busting himself open too.
Sure. And there's the point where Hashi, where he hits that big headbutt that drops him. And Ikeda gets up at 9. And Hashi has this look on his face like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, he's lost.
Everything. I hit him with everything I have. And he won't go down.
It's like a comparison, and I hate to use this comparison, but it's kind of like the last like Cena Owens match, which compared to this match is complete. You know, it is what it is. But yeah, Cena had that look on his face, like after he gave Owens the AA off the second rope, and Owens kicked out. And Cena's like, "What the fuck am I gonna do?" And that's basically the look that Hashi had here.
What the fuck am I gonna do? Look 50 times in that match. They had one moment. It really was the triumphant climax of this match. Well, that match, I think Cena kept, you know, that look on his face the whole goddamn match. And and Cena would do it, and then he would look. I mean, I thought that was like your the difference between Kenta Kobashi, Burning Hammer, and like there was like whoever the guy in the IWA Mid-South that did it.
Oh.
Do you remember the fat guy in IWA Mid-South that used a Burning Hammer as his finish? Fuck. This was a really funny joke. I can remember that.
Cash Flow? No. Mimic Page?
No, it wasn't somebody.
Growing Hard?
No. It was like during your indie dream match period of IWA Mid-South, one of those bozos used a Burning Hammer as a finisher. It wouldn't like throw it out in the middle of matches. That's the equivalent of the facial expression in that scene. That move thrown with the Burning Hammer at, you know, minute six in a match against Jason Rain or whatever.
Yeah, this was just, you know, watching this match, because this is a 30-minute match.
Yeah.
Almost. 28 minutes was the finish time. And, I mean, it's 28 minutes of war in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And it built up. And, like, you know, it's you get the headbutt rampage, like, halfway through, maybe a little bit earlier. But, yeah, it's just total insanity.
Yeah, and then you get the very end, which really does feel like two guys, you know. That
it's a war of attrition.
Yeah.
And Ikeda wins it.
Yeah, and he just it basically takes everything that Hashi has to give and keeps getting up until Hashi's like mentally broken.
Yeah.
Like Hashi's like, I took 2 years off my life. I'm not gonna remember any of my nieces or nephews' names.
Yeah, in front of 30-something people.
In front of 35 people, and this guy will not die.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's just, this is, you know, we talked about the Jack Goto match earlier. This is way more violent in that match. And there's no weapons.
Yes. No weapons, no chair shots, no knives, nothing. Just two heads. Just four guys. Yeah. Just head.
And not his head, his head either.
Yeah. I mean, I love Battle Arts. I love Futen. I love these guys. I'm going to have to rewatch the best Ikeda Ishikawa matches again, because this felt like the apex of that style. Like, this was it. This is the match. If you wanted to show somebody what this stuff is and why it's great, you show them this match and tell them to.
It's definitely up, you know, there. Yeah, I mean, you got to remember the Murakami stuff, you know, from 2001. That was awesome.
That was kind of match, right? I mean, those were more like street fights.
Yeah.
And less like sort of, I mean, those are kind of, I think, those are great. Great. So good. But those aren't really Battle Arts style as much as they are kind of more like New Japan style matches, I think.
Yeah. But yeah, you're more traditional stuff of like Ishikawa, Otsuka, Ikeda.
And there's various great Battle Arts tags like this too.
Yeah, and I'm forgetting some of the other guys' names off the top of my head, but
Takeshi Ono.
Kasumi Yasuda, yes.
Takeshi Ono, who's like, you know,
Ono, yeah, I mean there's a lot of guys.
Of all time who's got 40 matches on tape.
Yeah.
Disappears for 5 years at a time. But you know, Takeshi Ono is the best. We're gonna do a commercial break here, which I should have done earlier, and hopefully we'll get more professional later. the Place Me Nation, and then we're gonna come back and we're gonna dig in the crates for something that is not wrestling.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of the Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on The Mothership, The Place to Be Podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Show, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Griscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport, featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Lounge, hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman Podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows are available on PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. That's the pro wrestling only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Elmer.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds, wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Goodwill Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWO-PTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
Okay, welcome back. Thanks to Place to Be Nation for hosting this, and there are a ton of great podcasts that you can listen to on this if you enjoyed this. Chris is on 75% of them, and the other Will is on 75% of them, and don't bother with the other 25%.
You said that, not me.
Yeah. Just kidding, guys.
Listen to all the shows on the Place to Be Nation Network.
All the shows on the Place to Be Nation. So this is the part of the Dig of the Crates where you recommend something that has nothing to do with professional wrestling. We didn't do this on the first show because I thought of it in between the first and the second show, but we'll do it on the third and fourth and fifth and how many of these I do before.
This makes me feel special.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a different thing. All right. So this is anything you want to recommend, Chris, a book, a movie, television show, an app, a website, a exercise regimen, a type of food, whatever it is, a religion. If, you know, like, so maybe somebody will dig in the crates for Catholicism one time. But all right, so what are we doing here?
All right. There's a new network that started on your affiliate local channel packages. You know how you have like MeTV and Antenna TV and stuff like that. As like your channel 2-2 or something like that. If you have like, if you're using antennas or even if you have cable, but there's a new number called Buzzer, which is like what Game Show Network used to be years ago before Game Show Network pretty much started just showing all original shows and shows from 2000s, but they show like all old game shows. And before I go to bed every night, if on the nights I'm not working, I go to bed later than what I normally do when I do work. The nights I do work, I watch old Perry Mason on MeTV, which is always good. But the nights I don't work, there's a game show that goes on in the 70s and actually went into the 80s called Tattletales. And it's hosted by Bert Convy. And the show's premise is they have three like celebrity couples that win money for their three sections of the crowd. and they get all these like raunchy.
So are these celebrity couples like that are married in real life, or just two celebrities?
It's so married in real life, or as the series went on, they were going to, like, if you were just going out together, or in the cases where you had like people in the closet, like they would have their friends. Like Charles Nelson Reilly was on there with a friend of his, a female friend.
Really?
And one time, he was on there with, I think, him and Fanny Flagg did the show together as friends, and both of them were gay and in a closet. So, what Buzzer shows, like, the early run of Tattletales. It started in, like, 74. And it's really, really good stuff because, I mean, they put these celebrities on the spot with these, like, really, I won't say raunchy questions, but really deep questions about their marital lives. And it's just...
Charles Nelson Reilly.
Well, see, I haven't seen those. Okay. But, like, the ones that are on Buzzer are like, I'll give you an example of who's on there. Like Bobby Vann and Elaine Joyce are like the dominant couple on the show because they pretty much always either win or they're always doing good. William Shatner and his second wife is on there. Who else? Chuck Woolery. Before he became even the host of Wheel of Fortune, he was singer Chuck Woolery. And his wife, Joanne Flug. Pat Harrington, the guy that was... what's that?
Was it Chuck Woolery, like a Tea Party guy? What is it that Chuck Woolery posts things about, like, Obama's birth certificate on social media now?
Yeah, Chuck Woolery and Pat Sajak are both heavy conservatives. But,
that's a bummer.
Like Pat Harrington and... I think it's Pat Harrington. His wife, the guy that played Schneider on One Day at a Time, him and his wife. Ben Stiller's parents... are on there a lot. And they'll have like other game shows like Alan Ludden and Betty White, Gene Rayburn and his wife. It's a perfect show for the time period because the set is like this, you know, off green color, and it everybody's got these funky clothes on, and it's just a really fun show. And I found myself going into the YouTube rabbit hole, and I found this playlist. They had like 70 videos of Tattletales on it. And end up watching all 70 videos in like 3 days.
We will post, that is insane. We will post the link to the Tattletales YouTube playlist on Sigma Kaida and on the website for on Place to Be Nation so people can check out Tattletales. That is great. I could not have asked for a better opening recommendation of something than that. That is great. Like, I mean, you're not going to go, I really enjoy Ballers on HBO. On the Buzzer Network, which I did not know existed, here's a game show from the 70s with Chuck Woolery before he was some game show. That is excellent. I'm going to recommend a book
for
readers out there. The book is called The Violent Century. And it's by, and I'm going to mangle this guy's name, Lavi Tidar, I think it is. He's an Israeli writer. And basically, the best way to describe this book, it's like a John le Carre novel with superheroes.
Oh, okay.
So the basic idea is, you'll see those, a fair number of books that are kind of like this, where you're going to write a novel about what would happen if there were superheroes. I've read a handful of them. Soon I Will Be Invincible. Austin Grossman was one that got a lot of very good reviews of this sort of genre. The idea here is, there's something that happens that turns a certain percentage of people into superheroes. And each of it happens in the 40s. And they have sort of represent the way the country might actually deal with this. So the American... actually become superheroes where they're showing off their, all their powers on war serials and things like that in the 40s. And then the Russians become like, powerful actors for the state. And then, British people become undercover spies. And so this is the idea is they take sort of the 70s years of the British Empire since World War II up until pretty recently. They mentioned 9/11 and things like that, of these two sort of British spies who also have superpowers. And they kind of set it up where there's something that clearly happened to one of them that's being revealed over the course of this thing. And, you know, they go from, you know, World War II to Vietnam and Korea and the Berlin in the 50s. So it's very, very well written. I'm a guy who doesn't read a ton of, I'm not somebody who reads a ton of like genre stuff. Mostly I read like literary fiction. So this would be something I think people who wouldn't necessarily even think they would be into a book about superheroes would really like. And if it's something that sounds cool by the description, you'll really like it because it's really well written.
You can't go wrong with British spies. Real life, fake life, whatever. You know, that type of stuff's always intriguing me. I love Bond movies. You know, any type of British spy stuff is great.
Yeah, so this is sort of that with, you know, if one of them, if they had superpowers. But weren't telling anybody about it because they're spies. So that book is The Violet Century. It's came out earlier this year. So I don't think it's in paperback yet, but it's still in hardcover. And it was an Amazon Best Book of 2015 pick. So we'll put up a link to the Amazon page for that on there as well. Chris, thanks for coming on, buddy, and fitting me into your very full list of podcast schedule. Why don't you hype some of those really quickly before we go off?
We got let's see. Between the Sheets just dropped. The last episode just dropped Monday, and they will drop every Monday. Last episode featured MLJ, indie ring announcer du jour, CCW, AIW, other groups. And we discussed August 11th through the 17th, 92, which is a pretty cool week. A lot of stuff going on. The one next week ought to be really good. I'm not going to spoil that one just yet. But it's going to be a fun show. I was on two of Will's SummerSlam Bonanza shows on this feed. We had the ROH versus NXT show that dropped, was it yesterday, with me, Dylan, and Dave Musgrave. And the SummerSlam versus whatever WCW pay-per-view that ran in the summer, pretty much, show with me, Will, and Parr from Titans, which is another good show.
ROH versus NXT, I'm picking NWA Classics.
And you've got the reaction shows coming up this weekend, NXT Saturday night, SummerSlam Sunday night. Next episode, Exile on Bad Street, hopefully will be next week. I was supposed to tape tonight. This is Wednesday. We're taping this. So, and a personal issue came in the way from one of the guests. So we'll be probably rescheduled for next week. And other than that, yeah, Phil, you're definitely going to be on Exile on Bad Street again in the future. There's a lot of cool things I've got in my head, all kind of different ideas. You know, so
sure, yeah,
we're gonna get this going, man. We're gonna keep it going as we can.
Cool. Yeah, I'm up for, you know, I'm always up to talk on some podcasts and run my mouth. That is one thing that I do better than I do almost anything else.
And this show is perfect for you. I mean, this is I'm glad that you're doing this type of show where you pick these random matches to watch, because every match that we talked about tonight is different in some form or fashion.
Yeah.
And a lot of these types of shows, they focus on like one set group, whatever. It's just maybe one set show or one set wrestler or stuff like that. But the variety is a slice of life. So hey,
yeah, no, I'm glad. It's been fun, and I get like one of the things I enjoy most about the sort of hobby of being a wrestling fan is kind of finding the thing that nobody talks about, right? Like I'm never gonna want to rewatch Kawada Masawa. But if you told me that there was a Kawada match from Stampede or something like that against Ron Starr, I'd be like ridiculously excited for it.
Yeah, or like some of these matches that's been coming up on YouTube lately from that the new channel where you had like Giant Baba and Onita against Ric Flair and Dick Slater. I mean, that sounds like an awesome match.
Yeah, there was I reviewed a Terry Funk versus Crusher Blackwell match on Sugino Kaeda. And it's like, who the hell knew that was a thing you wanted to see? But as soon as you knew it existed, how excited were you for that?
Exactly.
never thought about those guys ever having a match with each other, right? You never thought, like, oh, man, it's too bad. Crusher, but there's no Crusher Blackwell versus Terry Funk match. And then you find out it existed, and it was great. And, you know, Crusher Blackwell had some really cool headbutts and bled some. And, you know, just, you know, totally fun. So that's why I kind of like – that's why I like the show. We're going to be trying to find, you know, different stuff that people may have not heard about or thought about or under the radar things that they can kind of experience hopefully for the first time and listen to me and some good guests run our mouths about it. So I'll probably – this is going to drop Sunday again, and then we'll, there's a decent chance there'll be one the next Sunday. And then so hopefully people keep listening. Everybody read my blog and Eric's blog and occasionally Tom's blog, segundacaeta.blogspot.com. And check aspen.us for the Aspen Institute 5 Best Ideas of the Day if you're interested in the world around you that has nothing to do with
And the Lucha Reports. I do. Even though there won't be one today, there's a lot of big stuff going on today at the big press conference for the 82nd anniversary, which by the time this show drops, you'll be knowing all about it. So
that's very exciting. That should be fun. And the also for one other little thing, that by the time this show drops, it'll probably be available on the Lucha TV Plus YouTube channel. They're putting up the entire was it a Cara Lucha show or a Chalanga Mask show?
I can Chalanga match, which featured about two Match of the Year candidates.
Ooh, okay. So there you go. What two?
Let's see, Dr. Cerebro against Virus. And
there were like four or five of the ones that could be on paper. I mean, the thing about those Chalanga Mask matches is occasionally something on paper won't live up to the hype.
Yeah,
you know, 6 minutes or something like that and have a crap ending.
Yeah, and the Kaifon, can't remember his partner, versus Cedric Serra and Ultimo Guerrero match.
It's Abisman, right?
Abisman, yes, Abisman.
Abisman, that's my homie. I love that dude.
So, Black Cherry Jr. has raved about that show. So,
this Black Cherry Jr. Before. Versus Black, sorry, Guerrero Maya, Senior yes. Guerrero Maya. Okay.
Yeah.
Some stuff. There's some stuff. Excited about the show. So that's what I'm going to be. I'm going to be in California with my wife, and I'm going to have to find an excuse to watch a whole goddamn Lucha show on YouTube instead of spending time with her, even though she's been gone for a month.
Well, I know you can find a way.
I'll find a way. That is one thing I always do. All right. Well, thank you very much, Chris. I appreciate it. And keep checking back to Segunda Caeta and Place to Be Nation for new episodes of Digging in the Crates and all the other great podcasts on this network.
And you don't stop, I keep on. 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 Yo, praise the Lord for showbiz. My partner with the beats, with the Nikes on his feet. Buying old records is a habit. I get more run than a Volkswagen Rabbit. You know I gotta have it. I got more props than the cop called McGarrett, who played on Hawaii 5-0 and I formed a production company with Show and J Studio is the lab. But the session is closed, cause I know you got a big nose. Try to sniff out the name. You lack originality and that's a damn shame. Don't front, I know I got you open like a pack of tokens. Yo, I put your coat in. I'm not the one to be gamed on. I didn't know it was your girl we ran the train on. But no hard feelings, your girl was appealing. Did my share of dealing, sexual healing. You didn't know she was a groupie, but I'ma put you up on the scoopie. Used to live in Forest, my daughter lives on Morris. Used to play softball with my man Horace. I kick flavor like my man Sonny Chiba. Aries is my sign, I'm compatible with Libra. I like the program beats. Diamond D is out, I wanna say pay. Showbiz, there's deals to make. So let's get busy and dig in the crates.
Oh, you don't stop, you keep on.
Digging in the crates.
Let's get busy.
Keep on.
Digging in the crate.
Yo, thank the law for Diamond D. No afro instead, he keeps dreads in his head. My partner from the past, from 163rd back when I was a hoodlum, beating on nerds. It started way back
when.
About 12 years ago, I was 9, he was 10. Before smoking weed and hanging out and playing hooky, we used to break dance in the jams, electric boogie. Girls watch jockin', my nickname is Rockin'. The crowd, I was shocking, freaks, I was clocking. Step up and see showbiz performing. My beats hit hard like Big George Foreman. So MCs and DJs who thought they were nice and get upset like Buster did to Tyson. That wasn't the plan, and he's still my man since he beat up Miss Green outside Dapper Dan. Dapper Dan. Wait a minute, that's a different subject. Talk about the Moet and the Pipers, that's in effect. Back to the show. The show B-I-Z down with D-I-T-C-A-G is my MC, relying on the giant of a lion, never crying for the crack, cause I'm not a crack client. Girls stick like crazy glue, they think they're getting dope, but I treat hoes like drugs, I just say no. I lamp in a residence, so keeping dead presidents a fact. I like my pockets fat, not flat, flat. A rapper, not a singer, so hook it, don't bring her. Problem to me, so go ahead, you humdinger. Show's about to blow in 91, so I'm straight down with the crew caught digging in the crates. Digging it in the crate.
So get back, get your sticks and get your bats, get your licks and I'ma still get fat. Try to diss and get the back hand. I'm dressed in black, a black hat for a black man. The giant is better and clever. Go ahead and sleep and you'll rest forever and ever. Ever. I'm like a bomb, sometimes I'm calm. No telling what can happen once the mic is in my right palm. Me and showbiz too deep, but don't sleep. Go ahead and retreat or face agony of defeat. AG is in command. You remember the black hat at the bottom of my Timberland. Save it. If you think you pose a threat, just chill and watch how many hoes I get. Now you sweat the props I got.
Kick a rhyme.
A rhyme? Sure, why not? Always get fat to a hype track. So finesse.
What's up?
Psych, give me that mic back. The crowd I'll capture. Microphone master. Finger licking and kicking lyrics from here to Africa. I'm the bold kind. My rhymes are gold mine. Let it off. Set it off just for old times. Think you're ready for this? You wanna battle? Your music is riddle rattle. Your rhymes are scribble scrabble. The giant is greater, so I'm great. Down with the group called Digging in the Crates.
Yeah, yeah. We gonna set it off like this.
D-I-T-C.
Now when it comes to lyrics, mics are pulverized. It's law finesse, time to go for mine. So stand back, let the men play. I put rhymes in shape just like Bengay. I'm great and honorable, suckers I bomb a few. I run more games than a carnivore, I'ma get mine. As soon as your city start, sweat hoods and funky rhymes is my trademark. I'ma get fame, not from her or his name, cause yo,
what's up?
I'm funkin' in a shit stain. Mics I smoke, rhymes I hurl. My hobby is collecting fly looking girls. Strictly for the ladies, call me Lord Finesse. And I'm all about money and sex. Finesse is the name to say, and I came to play. We can have fun, but put the whips and chains away. Sex and money is what makes me a happy man. And I sport more styles than Jackie Chan. I keep rising, I'm not the type to sink low. Me take a loss on a mic? I don't think so. Lord Finesse is out to make tapes. Down with the crew called Digging in the Crates.